This is Crossroads, a Get Religion podcast.
We're talking about an allegation of sexual assault. I've never sexually assaulted anyone. I did not have sexual intercourse or anything close to sexual intercourse in high school or for many years thereafter. And the girls from the schools I went to and I were
so
friends.
So you're saying that all through all these years that are in question, you were a virgin?
That's correct.
Never had sexual intercourse with anyone in high school?
Correct.
And through what years in college, since we're probing into your personal
many
life
Many years,
there?
Many years after. I'll leave it at that. Many years after.
That's an excerpt from Fox News' interview with Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and his wife, Ashley. It's being called by the press, sometimes rather derisively, and certainly by those late-night comics, definitely derisively, the virgin defense. No one appears to be able to believe that anyone, much less someone raised in the kind of culture and atmosphere that Brett Kavanaugh was, that is, the country club set, the people who spend their summers riding horses and swimming at the club, and then having weekend parties, apparently replete with rape gangs and things like that. No one can believe that someone could make it into his college years as a virgin. So it's being called the virgin defense. How is the media covering that particular claim of Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. And he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here, I guess.
So, are you wishing you were back in our nation's capital right now?
You have no idea how glad I am not in Washington, D.C. right now. If we can go on Rocky and Bullwinkle and set the Wayback Machine for just a couple of years, I've been back in the hills of East Tennessee and part-time in New York for about 3 years now. And during the last years I was in Washington, D.C., it hit me over and over that I didn't belong in Washington, D.C. And the primary reason I didn't belong in Washington, D.C. is that I'm not all that interested in the mechanics of partisan politics, especially as we have watched them develop. Now, if I was that burnt out, and that was before Trump, and before walking around on Capitol Hill began to feel like you were walking around in a demilitarized zone at best, I can't not even imagine what it's like there today. I just can't. It's got to be my Twitter feed times 100. Is really the only thing I can think about it.
What did you make of how the media, including really kind of, I think it began with the Fox News interview wherein Brett Kavanaugh and his wife sat for some time in the evening for Fox News, and the question of his sexual past was raised, and he asserted that he was, I think it was the reporter that actually used the word, he asserted that he was a virgin through his high school years and for several years on into college. He wouldn't specify beyond that. And no one seemed to find it even remotely believable that anyone could make such a claim credibly.
Well, it's interesting on multiple levels. If you go back and look at his opening statements at the original hearings, which doesn't that seem like 100 years ago right now? If you go back to what he said originally, his Catholic identity, and specifically and ironically Jesuit education identity, was a huge part of his opening presentation. However, sexuality wasn't a part of that. That's not the sort of thing that you just walk out and say, oh, hi, folks, let me tell you about my sex life, you know, in high school and college. Not your normal opening remarks for a Supreme Court hearing. But this may sound like it's strange, but I want to compare this for a second. You remember what it was like when Tim Tebow used the V word and said he was saving sex for marriage in the press conference, and then there was this long, huge pause, and Tebow said, you guys seem a lot more upset about this than I am. And everybody kind of laughed, but immediately after that, the media of our nation went crazy attacking Tim Tebow. If not attacking him, something even worse, which is mocking. Meanwhile, if you read between the lines of several pieces that were written at ESPN and elsewhere after that, it's pretty apparent that major media in America went hunting, trying to be able to mount the head of Tim Tebow on their wall in terms of, well, we're going to show that no big stud football player would say this. He's either got to be lying or he's got to be gay secretly or whatever. But we're going to kick this guy's butt over this statement. Some people honestly believe it cost him another Heisman Trophy in the sense that he became a joke. That joke escalated to the point that it then began to affect his career. And at the time when he normally might be considered by some people as an improving but still imperfect backup quarterback in the NFL, people were specifically saying they didn't feel they could sign him because the media would turn it into a circus. Do you remember all that?
Yes.
How do you think the media views this issue when we're dealing with the man who is going to replace the justice who functioned as the sovereign lord and king of America for the last couple of decades? Justice Anthony Kennedy, who in the famous words of Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, it's Justice Kennedy's America, he just lets us live here. How serious is the sexual revolution and Me Too and abortion and all these other issues, how serious is that right now to the people who determine what goes on page one and even more important, what goes in the late night comic routines? It's really an astonishing and amazing thing to watch. And I'm just as depressed as all, as we would say in Texas, heck fire.
So can we talk a little bit about the fact that for people who have religious sensibilities, even mild religious sensibilities, the issue of virginity, we should be honest, for a ever-dwindling few, is still important, something which I guess is impossible for people in the media, even conservatives in the media, to believe.
I think at this point, the way I put it in a piece I wrote at Get Religion, a lot depends on whether you think the most important word in this man's background is prep or Catholic. Now, you can say he's Catholic and prep, but I think in the eyes of a lot of people in Washington, D.C., prep is going to cancel out Catholic really quick. So what we're really asking here is how serious is this man's faith? Because while there are lots of people who are very serious about their faith, whose sex lives have taken interesting twists and turns at different times in their life, as a rule, people making an intentional decision to remain virgins longer than the national average, that is almost always linked to religious convictions, or it's linked to religious convictions in a very high period of time. So one of the things that we are debating here is whether you can be a religiously serious, good-looking, rich prep guy going to parties where alcohol was consumed and not do any of the things that in people's memories and partial memories can be framed as trouble. And I think a lot of people are just saying, oh, look, I just know too many prep guys. He's got to be lying. And I think that's the assumption of people who live in that world. So in a bizarre sort of way, faith has emerged as a central issue in this this battle royale, even if nobody's openly talking about it. Because what we're essentially talking about here is a man's sense of ethics and self and the degree to which that affected his sexual behavior and where he put himself and where he did not put himself during his high school and early college years. I think religion is very, very important in this, and we're not reading about it, are we?
No. And why is that? Why is the Catholic part of this, even if it is nominal for some of these institutions, being ignored?
Well, in this case, it's not nominal. What's really interesting is that he's an extremely active Catholic in a liberal cultural environment and in a, what everyone agrees is a liberal parish. And by liberal, I mean on the Catholic spectrum. There, you know, this man was not, you know, my hero or my choice to go on the Supreme Court. And, you know, one of the reasons, frankly, is I thought he was too Washington, too prep, too country club, too hanging out with politically correct Catholic sort of liberal people. He's a really interesting guy to be getting nailed up right now for being a member of the religious right. If you actually look at his background and you look at where he goes to church, where he got his education, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know why they're not talking about it, except that it doesn't fit the Me Too narrative, which is has been the only thing that matters once it was clear that his nomination was no longer certain. In other words, once the Democrats were able to play this explosive Trump card at exactly the moment when they played it, not during the hearings, not during a time of normal background checks, not even during the question and the answering, but later. Everybody listening knows all that. Once that card was played, nothing else has mattered. And then in the midst of all that, we have the V word being used, which in the context of the prep word, drinking parties, et cetera, is just the biggest possible joke imaginable. I think, by the way, if you're looking at this from the viewpoint of the church, whether young people right now are paying any attention to what's going on in this story, I think one of the things that we should come away with this is with a renewed emphasis on honesty and seriousness about how important drinking is and drinking to excess is in the lives of young Americans. And especially, I hate to be sexist about this, but in the lives of young women who are going to go into environments where there's going to be a lot of drinking and there's going to be a lot of guys, some of whom may not have great ethics and some of whom may, and some of whom may be somewhere in between, depending on the amount of alcohol consumed. I would think this would be a really good time for a pastor to do some preaching on issues related to young people, family life, and alcohol. Have you had that thought?
Yes, I have actually had that thought.
Yeah, as a guy in a collar, I kind of thought you might. I really think that's one of the things that has to be a takeaway from this event, no matter what happens. And, of course, you and I are talking while the action is still going on, and who knows, you know, where that will go in the next 1 to 2 days. If he withdraws and the White House nominates Amy Coney Barrett, this is all going to get even wilder because religion will then be the reason to attempt to defeat her, will be that she's too Catholic, too conservative, so much so that she's just got to be kept off the court because America doesn't want to become a theocracy. Buy stock on the word theocracy, you know, for the next couple of weeks, if Kavanaugh is not confirmed.
I'm wondering how much of what we're seeing here, and let's talk post-initial hearings that began here with Dianne Feinstein kind of dropping this bomb into this pin-pulled hand grenade into the middle of the confirmation process. How much of this is really about Donald Trump? And I don't mean he's Donald Trump's nominee. I mean he's a proxy in their minds for Donald Trump.
Well, this may surprise you, but I think Donald Trump has almost nothing to do with this at all, other than the fact that Donald Trump's not exactly the guy you want to have drawing headlines, making a case for your defense in a battle about the sexual harassment of women. Now, is he? I mean, that's kind of like being a feminist standing next to Bill Clinton. I mean, that they pulled it off for a long time because the media let them do it, but it was kind of awkward. Now, I don't think Trump has that much to do with it, and let me tell you why. If you think back to when Kavanaugh was nominated and you looked at the list, people were saying, okay, this is the big one. This is when Trump is really going to appoint a Trump-style Supreme Court justice. This is when he's going to just look the Democrats right in the eye and say, take this, weird people. But that isn't what he did. He nominated the A number one Bush, yes, I said that word, Bush era nominee. If the president of the United States right now was Marco Rubio or anybody else from that long line of people who sought the presidency in the last election, if any of those people were president of the United States right now and had nominated someone to fill the chair of Justice Kennedy, in which there was any chance whatsoever that this person was a legal and cultural conservative, exactly the same thing would be happening to that man if it was a man. And if it was a woman, most of the women being considered were all quite religious, and we would be then seeing a louder, fiercer version of the religious test hearings that greeted Amy Coney Barrett just a couple of months ago, or a year ago, if I remember correctly. So at this point, believe it or not, I don't think this has much to do with Donald Trump. Any Republican nominating any legal conservative would face this exact situation right now, that nominee would. The other thing is, if you actually know much about the current Chief Justice of the United States, and if you know his history of respect for precedent decisions and kind of his love of getting large votes and compromise and not wanting to decide things by 5-4 votes, I think you could make a case that the odds are very good at this point that a court with Kavanaugh on it in that chair would not overturn Roe v. Wade. I think you could make a case that what they would do is give us a kind of legal regime that is closer to that what we would see in Europe, like Sweden or Germany or something, which essentially would be what kind of the third trimester system of Roe v. Wade, with perhaps much stronger laws or even bans on abortions after viability in which there was not a sure threat to the life of the mother. So the irony right now is all of this fury and all of this venom and acid and vitriol is an attempt for people to defend the court from theocrats who want to turn America into Sweden when it comes to abortion. Have you thought it through like that? I mean, this is really a battle over third trimester abortion and viability. At least that's my conviction when you look at the legal records and decisions of these men who would be the center votes on that. I can't see them overturning Roe v. Wade, which makes all of this even more kind of acidic and ironic. Well, you can kind of tell where my mind is right now and where my heart is. This has all been extremely depressing to me.
I agree with you completely there. Are we also seeing something, or at least being able to observe the symptoms of a cultural and moral gap in the United States? And by that, I mean this, Terry. Most of us didn't spend our high school summers at the club, you know, diving and horseback riding and things like that. There's a cultural gap here between people who go on to careers after Yale Law School and things like that. That's the cultural gap.
It's also the culture of the successful people and rich people around Washington, D.C. Beltway and country club life. That's part of the reason why they can't imagine that this guy is who he claims he is, because such a high percentage of them lived that life and they were there. And they're thinking, I went to those parties. I know what happened. I know what went on. I know what we did. This guy's got to be lying. Ironically, this man is from the culture of the D.C. and Eastern Country Club. That he really is a part of their world. And that's part of what this is all about. This guy isn't from a Baptist church in Dallas or a Catholic who went to Notre Dame or something like this. Maybe this guy is the worst thing possible to journalists, lobbyists, and other insiders in Washington. Maybe they fear this guy actually is a heretic.
What do you mean by that?
A cultural heretic, someone who has become an enemy of his own class. Is that clear enough? This guy is hanging out and being defended by all the wrong people. People from Texas and churches and religious mega churches and parachurch groups. This guy has all the wrong friends for someone who grew up in wealthy country club prep elite Eastern life. So again, they think he's lying. He's betraying them just to be able to get on the court. He's rebelled against his class.
Which is worse, Terry, in that mindset? A guy who lived that life that we all did. I'm speaking here as a Washington, kind of typical Washington insider. We went to those parties, we did those things and saw those things done, and now he's lying. Or the guy who lived that life but didn't do those things.
It doesn't matter. He's replacing Judge Kennedy. All that matters is who he actually is now. Whether he's a repentant sinner or whether he's somebody, or now see, notice, he has said none of this stuff happened at all. So in their viewpoint, he's now a liar, and that has legal implications. But whoever this man is, he's on the wrong side. And that's all that matters. And he's replacing the man who effectively on moral and social and cultural and sexual revolution issues has ruled America and made all the crucial votes. So this man must die. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line.
From the media's perspective, is there also that kind of moral gap in evidence? And that is, we've learned from Me Too that the world of media is a dirty, dirty place run by men who routinely have, what do they call it, Matt Lauer's rape button under their desk and things like that, and women who have been subjected to this. And I'm wondering if the media says, nobody lives this way.
Well, it's possible, but see, I know too many people in the media who do live normal lives. The media is a much more complex place than you would think, and there are a lot of people that I might consider cultural liberals who live very ordinary, traditional lives, married kids, go to school, the whole bit. I think this is a reminder once again of the fact that conservative culture, and I'll even be willing to say religious conservative culture immediately, is guilty of exactly what I said they were guilty of at the Issues Etc. conference. Right now, cultural conservatives are paying big time for their decades of hatred of mainstream journalists and their decades of believing that journalism and mass media was not a calling and vocations that good kids, that talented young Christians should go into, because they'll just go in there and lose their souls. Right now, yes, there's media bias involved in what's going on. Yes, a lot of it's shocking. And yes, I'm going to say it again, a lot of it is the fault of religious denominations, churches, schools, etc., who have done everything they could to destroy journalism as a potential job, vocation, and calling for talented young believers. And right now, they're paying big time. Because in the positions where it matters the most, right now, they have no voice. That matters when it comes time to shaping the political realities of the three or four Republicans who will decide Brett Kavanaugh's future in the next couple of hours, or the future of the court, no matter who is nominated. I'm making that point again. We chose this media. And in many ways, we chose to not continue to dialogue with it, wrestle with it, fight with it. We chose to just flip the channel to the people who are willing to preach to our choir and tell us exactly what we want to hear, and we're just not going to engage with any of that anymore. And America lives in two media worlds right now. And when I watch my Twitter feed scroll by, I can tell you exactly what publications and what television each of the people watch. And you can see it reflected in their arguments. And you can tell instantly that most of them, nothing that's being said today really matters. What matters is the emotions of the drama that's playing out and whether it fits their side's media template and ideas.
Terry, I know that as we speak, you have not, to retain your sanity for one more day, you have not imbibed any of today's hearings, either the testimony of Dr. Ford or of Brett Kavanaugh. But there was a religion moment that I want to tell you about that I think will probably be highlighted in the highlight reel this evening. And it was actually one of the points where Judge Kavanaugh broke down. He was talking about holding no animus against his accuser.
Yeah.
And he even mentioned...
This is the quote about his daughter.
Yes, his 10-year-old daughter in their prayers last night actually said, we should pray for the woman. And he commended his daughter for that. And I know that's got to be a moment for television because he's breaking down while he's talking about it. But how do you think the media or the late-night comics are going to play with that one? Because there's another thing they must say, that just didn't happen. No, he just made that up. No one prays for someone who's more or less ruined their life.
I think they'll leave that one alone, in part because it has concerns his family and it concerns a child. I hope they leave it alone. Maybe they all laughed behind the scenes, but I think that one's a bit too hot. Plus, my sense, just watching my Twitter feed and reading between the lines of a lot of comments, I think they won this morning, even though there wasn't a single changed fact in anything that happened this morning, even some things that could have been questioned and said that would have helped Kavanaugh. I think the overwhelming emotion of the first presentation today, I think they believe that the crucial Republican senators, two of whom are women, won't be able to fight that. I think they think he's dead. It will be very interesting to see if that's wrong, and we'll know really quick.
They also, if I recall correctly, thought that Justice Thomas was dead after the Anita Hill hearings. Does that teach us anything? The media was telling us it was over.
I don't know whether it does or not. The stakes are infinitely higher this time, and the media is several decades further down the road into a European open advocacy kind of mocking state. I'm trying to think of who I would trust to talk about this right now, with the possible exception of David French. If people follow that great never Trump legal mind today, they'll see that he continues to be a rational, calm human being when it comes to discussing the actual legal questions here, the facts that are emerging or not emerging, the fact that we still don't have a time, a place. There's just all the crucial facts you would normally ask. We still don't have some of the corroborating voices that we had in the Roy Moore case or that we have in Donald Trump cases or the Bill Clinton cases. We still don't have any of that. But if you follow French today closely, he's saying, does any of that even matter? This is not a trial. This is a media show. The rule of law does not apply when one side of the debate essentially controls the media forum and the framing of the issues that matter. So what will happen? Once again, only a handful of Republicans will make that decision.
I wonder if you would just put on your prophet's mantle for a moment. If the vote is held tomorrow as it's scheduled to be, and Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed, what will the headline be? If he is not confirmed, what will the headline be?
I don't know. In both cases, if he is confirmed, they will say this horrible person was confirmed. No one will ever believe the Democrats, once they control the Senate, may even vote to impeach. If he isn't confirmed, they'll say this is a great day for America. This shows the degree to which women's voices now matter in America and can be taken seriously in America. And moving on. Now let's go destroy a conservative woman.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.